Blog Talk Radio.
We
was a first. For those of you who listen to our program on a regular basis, I bet you that's the first time you've heard the complete song, and I'm somewhat surprised myself. So maybe that was playing for someone in particular, because the controls to turn the song off are nowhere to be found on our studio screen. So I hope you enjoyed that selection. And actually, if you listen to the words, there is some truth in that. However, as the mothers of our village, we want to do more than weep. There is some weeping to be endured when we look at the state of our society and the state of what's going on with our children, and especially our children who have been separated from their biological parents. However, we're bringing some joy into the situation as well. If you are interested in that song is actually an original song written and performed by our very own Mr. Damon Williams, who contributed that song to our fundraiser CD entitled We Are the Village, Volume 1. So that Friends with Heart, We Are the Children, We Are the Village, Volume 1. And we're excited about that, and you can find that CD on our website at www.forachildsheart.org and go to products, and you will see the whole CD with many other musicians, some of them also former foster youth, with various styles and genres of music there that are suitable for the family listening. So there's a little bit for everybody, for the children, the teenagers, the adults, the grandparents. So we hope that you enjoyed that song. So as we go into our program for this evening, you know, this is one of my favorite months of the year, especially during this season, because I am really a summer and spring person. But I always look forward to the month of November, not only and being able to give gratitude, which I do 12 months a year, 24/7. But in terms of celebration, this is National Adoption Month. And I first found out about this when I was an adoption social worker probably about 30 years ago. And I was just so excited to actually do my first event to be able to celebrate and make the community aware of the state of adoption, the need for adoption, and to know that adoption is more than just someone adopting an infant and a birth parent relinquishing her child. There's so many facets to adoption. And several years after I learned that, I myself became an adoptive parent. And having gone through that experience, having adopted my oldest son when he was 9, the youngest one when he was 7, who are now 30 and 34, I have a lot to say about it. And in my book, It's Hard Work, Being the Village That Raises a Child, I talk about it's hard, H-A-R-D, and it also is a work of heart. So if you really care, sometimes your heartstrings will be pulled, but in the long run, it is more than worth it. Our guest this evening is someone who I actually contacted their agency because in the past several months, I guess probably, yeah, since I started writing the book about Entertaining Angels Aware, dealing with my experience with my sister with Down syndrome, I realized that in the foster care system, there are also children with Down syndrome. And unlike many of our other transitioning foster youth, when they become of adult age or emancipation age, they can not necessarily move on to live independently just yet, even though many are learning to do that with a lot of the support services that are being made available. And I wondered, well, what happens? I also fostered a child with Down syndrome. And fortunately, she and her sister were adopted by a family who knew that they were making a commitment for life. And she's quite the little lady now, I must say. I was hoping that her adoptive parents could be on our program tonight. However, they are not here local at this point. They're traveling, I suppose. So I sought to seek out someone else, and boy, did I really find one for all and all for one. If you read our description for tonight's program, you will see that our guest is the founder of the National Down Syndrome Adoption Network. The National Down Syndrome Adoption Network is a referral and support agency which provides support to families who wish to adopt a child with Down syndrome, as well as to birth families who may be seeking alternatives to parenting as they prepare for the arrival of their unborn child. The mission of National Down Syndrome Adoption Network is to ensure that every child born with Down syndrome has the opportunity to grow up in a loving family. Our guest tonight is Mrs. Robin Steele. And not only is she the founder, you know, I had to go do that commercial, she's also a client. Robin and her husband have adopted a total of 10 children, and I think I'm still short one, but 4 of them with Down syndrome, and those are the ones that we're going to focus on tonight. They're also the proud parents of one biological son. So tonight, we welcome Mrs. Robin Steele as she shares her heart for what I call our angels. Are you still with us, Robin?
I think so.
Okay.
Thank you so much for letting me be a part of this program. It's wonderful.
I just so much appreciate your openness and willingness to be a part. And I'll share with our listening audience that you stated earlier that you're a little nervous, not so much about the interview, but that somewhere between those other 8 children in the house at this point, that someone might decide to have some type of, we won't even say disruption. They will just make their presence known.
And I am eternally grateful for my husband, who is upstairs keeping watch on all of this. Supposedly sleeping children. It is 9 o'clock here, so a little bit later than it is on your side of the country. But hopefully they are all in bed and will stay there.
Well, if we don't, we're a child-friendly program because that's what it's all about them. So tell us when, where, and why did you start the National Down Syndrome Adoption Network?
Well, for us, it really began when we met our oldest daughter, our first adoption. Marcia is now 42 years old. And meeting Marcia changed the direction of our lives. We really planned on adopting children. We had talked about that prior to getting married. But meeting Marcia, this little girl with Down syndrome, set us on a journey for our family, which eventually resulted in our involvement with the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati here in Cincinnati, and then with the adoption program that has now been in existence for over 30 years. Marcia's birth mother made an adoption plan for Marcia when she was born. However, she did not know that Marcia had Down syndrome. So when Marcia was born and the agency found that she had Down syndrome, they believed that she was not adoptable. And we actually met her when she was 3 and a half and living in a group home here in Cincinnati. The plan of the agency was that she remain in that group home and grow up in that group home. And they didn't care around us meeting Marcia, falling in love with Marcia almost from the minute we laid eyes on her, and then making every effort to make her a part of our family. And knowing that her birth mother really intended for Marcia to be adopted by a family, we began to recognize the fact that there were probably other children like Marcia who were born with Down syndrome who may be connected with agencies that were not aware that there were families like ours out there, and we're finding hundreds of families out there who would have a heart for adopting a child with Down syndrome and find great joy in that. And so when the Down Syndrome Association of Greater Cincinnati formed here in 1981, that was, you know, we had at that point adopted Martha, who has Down syndrome, and also her sister Elizabeth, who is now 32 years old, and Elizabeth also has Down syndrome. And the beginning of the Down Syndrome Association here in Greater Cincinnati gave us the opportunity to begin something that we had always talked about and thought about, and they provided the resources for us to really bring that to reality and be able to begin connecting children with Down syndrome who needed adoptive families with those families who we knew were out there and waiting for them.
Wow. So you're saying the mother relinquished the child to with an adoption plan,
yes.
And the agency
absolutely.
That had her, it was just planning on leaving her in a group home for the rest of her life.
Yes, and, you know, the awareness that there were families out there, you know, there was knowledge that there were adoptive families out waiting to adopt healthy infants. But many agencies were so used to doing that, private adoptions with healthy infants, that they didn't realize that there was a whole pool of families available who would find great joy in what can be the challenging process of parenting a child with a disability. And so just making those agencies aware that these families exist was something we knew that, you know, we might have the opportunity to do.
Wow. You know, looking back at that, you know, that you had the heart. It didn't take a rocket scientist for you to figure out that all it required was just some networking and some communication.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that make you shake your head and wonder why someone didn't think of this before?
Oh, yes.
It really does.
And why it's still sometimes a lot more challenging together. You know, it seems like the process should be a lot simpler. You have a child who needs a family. You have a family that wants a child.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, all we needed to do was to provide a link for that to happen.
Exactly. Wow. You know, it almost brings me to tears because, for one, I guess, I don't know why, it just never really occurred to me. And strangely enough, before I was an adoption social worker, I also worked for the Golden Gate Regional Center in San Francisco, which is the state agency
uh-huh.
here that provides services. And I know that, you know, I was fresh out of college, undergraduate, and I did go to a lot of different facilities, but it just never really occurred to me. So I guess I can't be too hard on people, being that I had firsthand experiences, and it took me probably, well, longer than 30 years for it to become just so much aware of the need. And I guess one of the things that really stands out to me is the fact that the two young ladies that I fostered, you know, were siblings, and there was a possibility that they could have been separated, you know, because one family
mm-hmm.
may have wanted a child that didn't have any developmental disabilities, and then for some people who wanted to have a child, you know, that just really in love with, you know, just the characteristics of a Down syndrome child, may not have wanted to go through the quote-unquote normal developmental periods of adolescence of another child. So I don't know, when you talk about older children. One of the things that I made a note of about your agency, which is so important to me in regards to any child, is that your agency ensures that no child is labeled unadoptable.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the assumption for a long time that children that somehow adoptive families were always looking for a perfect child, that they wouldn't stretch those limits a little bit, was such a wrong assumption. And you're mentioning siblings, and I think, you know, my husband and I have been foster parents for 30 plus years, and I know that when we first became foster parents, so much has changed, but when we first became foster parents here in Cincinnati, we had to actually sign a paper saying that we would not adopt a foster child placed in our home. And we also, in the process of adopting our son, it was our second adoption, he was part of a sibling group, and yet because he does not have Down syndrome, but he did have developmental delay, and because of that, the agencies placed the siblings, and there were seven siblings altogether, they placed them in separate homes because they just didn't feel like an adoptive family could take on the needs of more than one child if they had a disability, which is another thing that has changed, hopefully totally changed because of the real benefit of siblings remaining together in their adoptive placement. And it would have been wonderful for our son Peter if he would have had that opportunity. And, you know, the changes that have occurred are very positive ones. Hopefully they will continue to make progress in making sure that there is the same amount of effort put into identifying adoptive homes for children with special needs as for children without special needs, and that there is an effort to place siblings together.
Exactly. It just brings me to tears because I could not even imagine having been separated from my sister. It was just the two of us. And God forbid, mm-hmm. had something happened, you know, to our parents, and someone tried to take us, one of us in and not the other, I don't know what that would have done to either one of us, really. You know, and even mm-hmm. now, she's 45 years old, and we could barely be separated for a day. Some people would probably call that an unhealthy attachment. But, wow, just to think of going to different families, which I'm going to jump over to another slightly different topic than where we were mm-hmm. going. But right now, we were talking about open adoptions because a lot of families are not open to maintaining contact either between biological siblings, if they are placed separately, or even with any of the biological family. And a lot of that, especially coming through the foster care system, is because it's assumed that there was bad blood in the biological family if the child was in foster care in the first place. So you've adopted both through a private adoption as well as through foster care, correct?
All of our children by adoption have come through public agencies. So,
okay.
But we have, so initially, and what I mentioned before, not being able to adopt your foster child. So our first adoption, our adoption of Martha and then Peter and Elizabeth were all adoptions through public agencies, but they were not foster children in our home. After we adopted Elizabeth, we were so impressed with her foster family in Toledo, Ohio, that had taken care of her for the first 8 months of her life. And they really influenced us to become foster parents ourselves. And so after we became foster parents, then interestingly enough, as I said, we had to sign a paper that said we would not adopt our foster child. And so when we wanted to adopt again, and our son Zachary, who is now 30 years old, we were actually fostering, but we were not fostering Zachary. Zachary was in a different foster home. So we were allowed to adopt him because he wasn't our foster child. That makes no sense, but that's the way it worked. The system worked at the time. And so after Zachary's adoption, then the agency actually changed their policy and we were allowed to adopt. So then our children that were adopted after Zachary were foster children in our home. But we have not done a private adoption.
Okay.
But one of the things that our experience, and our kids, our adopted kids, several of them have contact with extended family. So there is a degree of openness. But with the National Down Syndrome Adoption Network that I co-direct, many of the families that come to us, birth families who come to us and want to make an adoption plan for their child who has either been born with Down syndrome or is yet to be born but has Down syndrome, many of those families will request an open adoption. And so when families register with us as being interested in adopting a child with Down syndrome, that's something that we make sure we know how comfortable they are with openness. So that if a birth family comes to us and wants an open adoption, we will absolutely find them an adoptive family that is comfortable with any degree of openness that they're requesting.
Awesome, awesome. What has been your observation of the impact of having an open adoption?
I'm really kind of biased in that area, and so I need to admit that up front. But I have seen open adoption be such a positive thing for the birth family, for the adoptive family, and for the child that it is hard for me to, you know, and like I said, I've been doing this for 30 years. It's really hard to think of a situation where it wasn't a positive choice on the part of the families involved. And that just because it allows a child to maintain contact, to know the information that could get lost. And, you know, adoptive families can do a really good job of sharing information about the birth family with their child, their adopted child. But that connection, that real life connection that comes with openness, whether that's just, you know, letters on a yearly basis or it's actually, you know, meeting once a year or three times a year or whatever, it is such a positive thing for a child and can be so reassuring for the birth family to know that their choice is the right one, and for the adoptive family to know that they always have that connection. So if something comes up that they're not sure about, like medical history kinds of questions, they've got that opportunity to go directly to the source and say, you know, in your experience, can you shed any light on what's going on with this child? And so, yeah, I'm like I said, biased in that area, but I think that for the most part, it is a really good thing.
Yes, and I'm glad that you're biased, and you know, but there's always an exception. But I think to probably realize that it's more positive than it is of the negative, because of course, you know, media, television, and everything will always blow up the negative situations, but as with most anything else, very seldom does anyone share the positive aspects of it. And I think there are probably people who probably have the mindset, especially that if a child has a developmental disability, that it doesn't make any difference to them anyway. And I think that's undermining the being human side and the emotional abilities of and needs of our young people. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's one of the reasons why I feel so very strongly that children have connections to their birth history. And even our son Jeremy, who was born at 23 weeks gestation. Jeremy also doesn't have Down syndrome, so I guess I need to throw that in there too. But He was born very, very early. His birth mom was only 13 years old. And he has no recollection of her presence in his life. But the fact that all of my adopted children have life books that give them their story, how they ended up being adopted, where they came from, all we know about their extended family, all of those things are, and Jeremy does have developmental delay, but that life book is so very important to him, and that's been true of all of our kids, that, you know, that that having that source can go back to where we can talk about the pictures in the book and you know, why their birth parents made the choices they did for them, or why those choices were made for them, for their birth parents, by the state. And in any case, we can talk about the positive things as well as, you know, the reasons why an adoption plan was necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just so awesome to be able to even watch the light on a child's face when you're talking about them. And one of the things that I pointed out in my book is that these are little souls. These are just precious little souls that are here for a purpose. And we don't know how much they're taking in. And one of the things that I'm sure that you are a witness to is that there's so much to be learned from them. And we have no idea what they're getting from us. And so I would say give, as if they knew everything and more that we know, that they felt everything that we feel and more, and treat them like we would want to be treated.
Exactly.
Some of the experiences that you have had with your children, I'm sure, have just been very heart-touching, and you sound like if you had the opportunity, well, not only if you had the opportunity, you would do it all over again. I understand that you're still thinking about doing it yet again and bringing another child into your family.
Well, right now we're committed to fostering here in Cincinnati. We have, as I mentioned, currently 3 foster children in our home. We are at the age and stage in our life where adoption is probably not in the best interest of a child. It's just because we are, if my husband and I are in our 60s now, and we've really determined that that wouldn't be fair, although we do want to continue fostering, and we really do enjoy it and working with the birth families whose children we are caring for. And if those children need to be placed for adoption, then we do everything that we can to advocate for the very best possible placement for them.
Wonderful. So the services that you provide, you say you're not an adoption agency, you do not conduct home studies, you do not do child assessments, but you're exactly what you said, a network. So you connect agencies with families and families with agencies, and you also do birth parent counseling.
Yes. Our information on children with Down syndrome who need families come from several different sources. The majority of time we will get a call directly from a birth parent or someone, maybe a genetics counselor who is working with a birth parent, or an obstetrician who has delivered a baby with Down syndrome to a birth parent and who knows about our services. And so so what we do initially is to share information with that birth family, because quite often the diagnosis of Down syndrome comes as a shock to a family, and they just really aren't prepared, and they certainly don't have information other than that there's something wrong with their baby. So we make every effort to tell them all that's right with their baby too, and that there's a light at the end of what seems like a very long tunnel for them because they have such limited information. So the calls that we get from birth families about 50% of those calls will end up with the birth family deciding to parent their child. And that for us is truly a success because like you mentioned, our goal is to ensure that every child with Down syndrome has the opportunity to grow up in a loving family. And when that family is their birth family, that's absolutely wonderful. Yeah. So that's part of our job. When we get contacted by an agency who already has custody of a child with Down syndrome, and that can happen with a private agency contacting us or a public agency, then what we do is we work with that agency to assist in identifying families. And adoptive families can register with us. They do have to, obviously, adoptive families must have home studies completed by licensed agencies in their home states. So when an adoptive family decides they want to adopt a child with Down syndrome, they can get a registration form from us. There are no fees for our services, no fees to the adoptive family, no fees to the birth family, no fees to anyone. And because we are not an agency, and because what we can do is just share information that will help link birth families or agencies with adoptive families that are also working with agencies because they've had home studies completed. So we just provide that linkage and then any counseling that the birth family needs as far as just getting resources or making the connections they need, or in the case they choose to parent their child, helping them find resources for any questions they might have about parenting as well.
Wow. Approximately how many families would you say that you serve in a month?
Wow, that's a good question. Birth families, it's not unusual for us to get a couple of calls a week from birth families or from a genetics counselor, social worker representing a birth family. Mm. So, and it varies greatly, and my children will tell you, we have our adoption line, which is the cell phone that I carry with me all the time, is... When mom's phone rings, then everybody's just kind of know that mom may be phone for the next hour talking with a birth family that's just received a diagnosis and is struggling with what to do with this information and sorting things out. And so that's the service we provide is available 24/7. And when the calls come in, then we address whatever issues need to be addressed. And then thankfully I have a co-director, Stephanie Thompson, who is the adoptive parent contact, and she takes care of the database that contains currently, we have, I believe Stephanie said, 190 families registered right now.
Wow.
Those families all interested and desiring to adopt a child with Down syndrome. Some of them are waiting for infants, and some are waiting for teenagers and everything in between. And so what we do is when we get a call from an agency or a birth family who wants to make an adoption plan for a child, then Stephanie takes over once we find out what the family is looking for, what the needs of the child are, what the agency requirements are. We take that information, and through our database, we're able to identify families very quickly so that we can provide that information to the agency or to the family.
Wonderful. So I heard you say that there are some who even want teenagers. So that is awesome to me, because even just with a typical teenager, most people don't even want to parent. So I guess the other question for me was, it sounds like you're doing a really awesome work and intervening early in the child's life so they don't get that disrupted childhood of going from placement to placement or facility to facility. But what about some of the older children who for some reason did not have access, or their parents did not have access to the services that you provide there in the system. Are you finding that agencies are looking more towards permanent placement for older children with developmental disabilities?
I wish that was always the case, but unfortunately, I think the public system, foster care system, is overwhelmed with the number of kids that are in need of homes and services. And so our effort is to identify those children in foster care who have Down syndrome, and in some cases other disabilities besides Down syndrome, but to assist their agencies in identifying families. We've been really successful in doing that. The hard part is to convince public agencies that that they can accept our help and that we don't have ulterior motives for doing this, that what we want to do is help identify families. We have families registered with us, and they are families with home studies completed by licensed agencies. So it's a very simple thing for us to call a family and say, would you be interested in this 14-year-old boy who has Down syndrome and has a dual diagnosis of autism as well, and you know, and has these behaviors and has these needs and also has these strengths, and identify that family and have that family then send their home study to the agency that holds custody of the child. That seems so easy and so reasonable, and yet there is a reluctance, unfortunately, by some agencies to use our program for their assistance. I'm hoping that will change over time, and that they'll begin to recognize that what we're all about, that every child with Down syndrome, there's no such thing as an unadoptable child. I really truly believe that. And we've seen that happen, and we've seen wonderful, wonderful stories of older children who blossom in a permanent, loving home when they maybe not have had the opportunity to ever be in a permanent situation. They may have moved from foster home to foster home or lived in some sort of group home setting, and it can make a world of difference for a child.
Yes, yes. And you might not say this because you have to maintain your working relationships with the public agencies, but I can say that I really feel that the public child welfare system, bottom line, if we bring children out of the system and put them in homes, that's a loss of money to the agencies. So I really believe when you look at all of the facilities that are set up for a lot of the children are just warehoused. And I'm not saying that there aren't good group homes there, but for some, it's just a number and a check. I recently connected with a sibling of a young man with Down syndrome recently who passed, and he was in his 60s. And we just had a wonderful little chat, and she was saying that at one point he was living in a facility, and she started noticing that his functioning, you know, was deteriorating. And most people say, oh, well, it's age. But when she realized that some of his health needs were not being taken care of appropriately, he was on gobs of medications that were not necessary for his functioning. She was saying it's when she decided to bring him home and put everything in perspective, he turned into a totally different man. And I said, that's what I'm talking about. So I think just being able to go through the process, and I think probably having advocates to help families through the system on how to obtain those resources. I actually just got a questionnaire. It's probably about 15 pages from our State Department here wanting to know how I've been able to access services for my sister, et cetera. And I, you know, had to laugh because being in the field, being educated, there's some of those just mazes that I have difficulty with. Can you imagine, you know, what the person who's not really familiar with systems and all they want to do is love a child, how frustrating it might be for them. So, yes.
Absolutely.
Definitely. What is the greatest joy and what is the greatest challenge for you in both your work professionally and in your being a parent?
I think the greatest joy for us has been just watching our children grow from the time and I guess that sort of coincides with the greatest challenge too, because I think that a lot of times the preconceived notions about what a child can and cannot do because they have an extra chromosome, that can be an uphill battle sometimes in convincing service providers, teachers, educators, medical professionals, that just because your child has Down syndrome doesn't mean that they can't do or shouldn't be able to or shouldn't be offered the opportunity to do. And over time, we've had the great opportunity to watch some of those misconceptions fall by the wayside. I know that when we looked for a school placement for our daughter, Martha, there were very, very few options. Everything sort of funneled into, there were classes, but they were separate classes. There was no emphasis on inclusion. That has changed to the point that, our son, Cody, who is now 18 years old. He is our youngest adopted child with Down syndrome. And Cody is a senior in high school. He is in typical classrooms. He is fully included and participates in the classroom with support. And, we have seen that change. Watching that happen and watching my children respond and astound the people with the things that they're able to do. That's the joy part. And the challenge has been, walking that path initially and advocating for our kids in settings that we didn't really feel like we should have to advocate so strongly for them because they should. The professionals should already know this stuff. They should know that children with Down syndrome and other disabilities learn from their typical peers, and therefore there is a really good reason to make sure that they have those interactions during the school day and in the community. And so so we've watched that happen. And so and that's been such a positive and such a joy for us. But at the same time, there are still barriers there. There are still misconceptions. There are still people who make judgments based on, the certain abilities or inabilities, and so there's always, new battles to fight. So there. I think I answered the question.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And as you're talking about, the developments and the surprises, one of my, little favorite little statements is, how you like me now. and it's just a joy to see the things that even doctors say that they will not do. And I remember when you mentioned one of the children not being diagnosed with Down syndrome, at birth, and interestingly enough, my sister wasn't there. She was I know she was several months old before that. And I specifically remember the pediatrician talking about placing her in a facility, and it was like, are you crazy? You know, and for me, that was real crazy because I had been an only child all those years, and I had been waiting for my sister, so there's no way, now that I finally got her, there was no way taking her away from me. But all the things they said that she wouldn't do, you know, it's just been hilarious because she's done what she's needed to do. And I really believe that she probably would have done more had my mother not coddled her so much, you know, me as an adult. And I think she probably would have been a lot more functional than she is. But she's a character. Love her to pieces. And I know that you have two of your young people, or your children, even though I'll just say sons and daughters, even that they're always be our children, who are living independently now. Is that correct?
Yes, actually, Martha is, as I mentioned, she's now 42 years old. She's been living on her own since 1993 when she graduated from school, and she went on to live in an independent setting in an apartment, and now she shares an apartment with her fiance, and they are such you know, with all the couples out there who are always at each other and end up, their relationships just fall apart. Well, Martha and Clay have a relationship that's eternal. They are so close and so bonded at the hip. They are. It's just such fun when they come over to the house because they just tease each other and they just generally care about each other so much, and that's been wonderful to watch as well.
Oh,
but
so let's see, 1993. So she was 22.
Uh-huh.
So she's been out the house there. So how far is she from you? What does she do during the course of the day? How do they, you know, transport around the city?
Yes, they had. And Martha actually had a stroke when she was 33, I think. Whereas before she was getting very, very little support in the apartment that she lived with, lived in at the time, and that was before she actually met Clay at work. But the situation now for them is they share an apartment. Martha even has 24/7 support in the apartment just because she's taking medication for as a result of the stroke. But so they get that extra support, and then she travels by a system called Access here, which is run by our Cincinnati Metro system, has door-to-door services for people with disabilities, and so Martha takes advantage of that, and she goes into work every day. And she and Clay still work at the same employment site, and they yeah, that's amazing too, because they work together all day, they're together in the apartment, and they still really get along well, which is pretty amazing.
I love it. So she has 24/7 support. Now, is she able to cook or do household chores?
She and Clay share that responsibility, and
mm-hmm.
And of course they have a single staff member that stays in the apartment, so they have some extra help with doing that and with shopping and those kinds of things. You know, our goal for our kids with Down syndrome and our other children as well, because some of our children, in addition to our children with Down syndrome, also have disabilities, but our goal has always been independence and adulthood, and independence doesn't always mean living by yourself, or you know, living or just going off on your own. Sometimes it means doing that with support, but we really wanted them to have the opportunity, as you mentioned before, that whole kind of protective thing that sometimes birth parents have because they feel really nervous about their kids leaving home or think they really need to be cared for in their family, What we've found is that when you give our kids an opportunity to participate in community activities, to be comfortable in the community, and then give them the opportunity to live with support if needed, but in the community as well, it really truly makes a difference. And it's wonderful when the kids come home, like at Christmas time, all the kids come back home, and that's great. But they also have their own place and their own space and their own lives, and that's really truly what we wanted for them. Many people ask us, you know, what we've put in place for our kids long term, and yes, the financial things that we needed to do to make sure that there was support there for them have been done, but the most important thing we've done for them, I believe, is to give them those opportunities to be in the community, to have a circle of friends and support in the community, so that when David and I are gone, you know, they're going to miss us, I know, but we can feel confident that they are going to get the services they need, and they're going to be able to live their lives, continue to live their lives independently and with the support, and they'll be okay.
Awesome. That is just an awesome. It's very inspiring as well. And I would think for anyone who perhaps had not considered or maybe considered but, you know, wasn't really too sure how it could possibly work out, are inspired as well. Before we end our program, believe it or not, we're only 4 minutes away. Give us your contact information.
My contact information? First of all, let me give you our website, which is where you can access information on our adoption program, the National Down Syndrome Adoption Network, and it's www.ndsan, National Down Syndrome Adoption Network, .org. And so if you're interested in getting more information on adopting a child with Down syndrome, or you're in a situation where you need information on making an adoption plan for a child with Down syndrome, or you just want to see what it is we're about, that's the place to go. Birth families can contact me directly at 513-213-9615.
I'm putting this up on our chat page. So we have website www.ndsan.org. And
correct.
We have for birth parents who would like to seek counseling, if they've had a diagnosis of Down syndrome for their unborn child or newborn child, is 513-213-9615.
Correct.
Wonderful. Well, this is, and also you have a Facebook page, which I know that's not your department, that's Stephanie's department.
Yes.
I think probably just under National Down Syndrome Adoption Network on Facebook, and you can go there. Actually, I thought I had found you, and I was on a different Down syndrome adoption page. So that, and I think it was just adopted parents who have adopted children. So now I'm on your Facebook page as well.
Okay. And that's www.facebook.com/DSAdoption.
Oh, okay. Let me make sure I get that right. Facebook.com/. Say that again.
DS Down syndrome adoption.
Okay. Is Stephanie there now?
Yes, she should be.
Okay. No, I meant there. I thought maybe she was there with you. I wanted to hear her voice.
Oh, no.
Awesome.
Is she here? No. No, she's hopefully listening in, though.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to put this on our Facebook page for those who want to look. And we have two Facebook pages. One is foracildsheart.org. Actually, no, it's not. That's our website. Our Facebook page is actually For a Child's Heart, Inc. And we also, that was one for foster care and adoption. And then I have another Facebook page. It's called Entertaining Angels Aware. And that is the page dedicated to Down syndrome, dedicated to my sister and the book I wrote about her, Entertaining Angels Aware. So I am very excited and very pleased. This just touched a very special place in my heart. And I actually have some thoughts and ideas of how to possibly collaborate. So I will be talking to you about that because, as I said, this is very dear to my heart. And actually, one of the products or one of the donations for some of our books, a percentage of the proceeds, that's what I'm trying to say, it's getting late, and it's not nearly as late as it is on your end. The proceeds from our book is actually going to, there's a program called Camp Belong, and what it does, provides camp for siblings who've been separated through foster care and adoption to come together. And my goal is to be able to sponsor a sibling group that was separated, that's a Down syndrome child that's part of a sibling group that's been separated. So that's one of the commitments that I've made from our work. But I have some other thoughts about your program as well. So it's just tugging at all sides of my heart. And so I'm very grateful for you. I'm grateful to you. And I just admire the work that you're doing. And I will also be placing a link to your website on our website as well.
Good.
So bless you. Thank you for doing something special for a child's heart. And as and the title of this episode is, thank you for being down for adoption. And so that's a hip term, not being down as a depressed, but are you down for it? We're down for it. We're going for it. So give all of your angels hugs for me. Tell your husband they did a very good job. They did a better job than mine did because I think you probably hurt my little four-legged people trying to get words in during a certain part of this interview. But I think we did very well overall. So take care. God bless. And for anyone listening, please consider doing something special for a child's heart. Take care. God bless and good night. Well, we had all the music coming on. We have no music going off. So we'll just say good night.